You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Ten, nine, eight, seven, ignition sequence started. All engines are started. We have ignition. 2, 1, 0. We have a liftoff. We have a liftoff, and it's lighting up the area. It's just like daylight here at Kennedy Space Center. The Saturn V is moving off the pad. It is now clear of the tower.
Hello and welcome to the White Rocket Podcast, brought to you by White Rocket Books in association with the Earth Station One Network. It's one long conversation with a variety of guests about the best of popular culture. I'm Van Allen Plexico. Today's topic is a special broadcast, unplanned, unexpected, but we had to do it on the Guardians of the Galaxy movie, looking back in review. And be warned, I'm telling you up front, people, be warned, we're going to throw out spoilers crazily left and right. So if you haven't seen the movie yet and you don't want to have the entire thing ruined for you, stop now, go see the movie, and come back and listen to it afterwards. Joining me today in the first segment, and probably for the whole show, but with me from the beginning, is Ralph Angelo, who comes on our show for the first time and long overdue. Ralph, how are you doing today?
I'm doing fantastic, Van. How are you doing today? It's great to hear from you.
Yeah, it's great to finally have you on. Tell the folks out there sort of what you do in the new pulp and sci-fi world.
Well, I'm an author. I have several books out. My most popular titles are sci-fi titles. Mm-hmm. I have about 7 books out right now. And I write very much in-your-face, action-filled novels. Yeah. That's my thing.
And that's what I... Yeah, and you and I have known each other for quite a long time over the internet in particular, though we've met at least once in person. But you and I have always kind of shared a love for the cosmic stuff, especially Marvel's cosmic characters and all that, going back as far back as probably with the late 90s on the Avengers Assemble site and things like that, and the MV1 project.
Yes, I mean, I you and I know each other, I believe, since 97.
Mm-hmm.
Going back, you know, it's 17 years or so now,
yeah,
something like that. And, you know, we both always had that love for the cosmic Marvel characters.
Yeah.
Which... to me, and I know you feel the same way, we're the best of the bunch.
Yeah, yeah. Big fans of Marvel and all the stuff that all the way back into the 70s, I guess, right? Probably where you start or a little earlier. Where do you kind of pick up with having read that stuff originally?
Well, originally, you know, going back, I read comics back into the 60s.
Okay.
I was a kid and my dad would buy piles of them and bring them home for me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, probably going back, you know, as early as I would think 64, 65.
Okay.
Something like that. And then, you know, I picked up on the more cosmic stuff through the Fantastic Four, which were really the first title to show all that, you know, along with Thor. Then early 70s, Roy Thomas on Captain Marvel kind of changed the character a little bit after Stan Lee had introduced him. And he made him this more cosmic character. Mm-hmm. And I was like, wow, great new costume, different type of outlook. I was like, this is interesting stuff.
And then Jim Starlin came along and really kicked it into cosmic high gear.
Oh, it was like another level.
Yeah.
When Jim Starlin came along, I mean, he just, you know, he was fantastic. The stuff he came up with, he completely... reworked Captain Marvel and made him into something instead of just this warrior soldier who was great. He was a great character.
Mm-hmm.
When he made him into the protector of the universe entire, he made this character so far, so much more interesting than he had ever been before. Mm-hmm. All of a sudden, he was this guy with this whole new perspective and the power to go along with it. He fought Thanos his first time out. Thanos was really... if you look back, the first universe-crushing threat to the Marvel Universe. you know, beyond Galactus, of course, or people like that. But I mean, a guy actually in human type form, mm-hmm. who was a threat throughout the universe. This was Thanos, and Stalin was the first one to do something like that. His perspective was incredible.
Well, and speaking of Thanos, that kind of brings us into our specific topic today, which is that we've got to look at the Guardians of the Galaxy movie.
So here we are. A thief, two thugs, an assassin, and a maniac. But we're not going to stand by as evil wipes out the galaxy. I guess we're stuck together. Partners.
Are you telling me the fate of 12 billion people is in the hands of these criminals?
Oh, yeah.
You and I did you you saw it on Friday, right?
Yeah, Friday night I saw it. Yes.
Me too. Yeah, I took the whole family. It's funny because, you know, people were saying, well, you know, it's having a huge box office right now. We're recording this on Monday afternoon after this huge weekend that has exceeded, I think, any possible expectations in terms of how well it would do, how successful. They've already greenlit the sequel even before it was released in the United States. And people were saying, well, you know, I can't figure out why in the world. It's such a mystery why it's doing so well. And I'm like, well, part of the reason why it's doing so well, not entirely, but there's two demographics things that I've seen about it already that you may or may not have seen. One, they were saying this was the first Marvel movie where over 40% of the audience the opening weekend was female. That's big because that's bringing in more bodies, more people. It's had a broader appeal than what it's had what they've had in the past. And number two, I think this is probably the first Marvel movie where lots of little kids have gone. And I say that just from my own anecdotal evidence that when we were in the theater, my own family is a good example of both demographics because all four of us went, and I'm 25%. You know, my 25% of the family is the male part. The other 75% of my local family here is female. So we had 75% women, and we took my 6-year-old daughter. So there were lots of little kids in the theater. They wanted to see Rocket. They wanted to see Groot. There were lots of women. It really was expanded beyond the audience you would get, say, for Iron Man or Thor, where it's mostly guys, you know, and mostly over the age of 10 or something or 6 or something. So it really did seem to catch a lot of demographic groups at the same time. Does that surprise you, or is that about what you expected was going to happen?
I was a little surprised. I saw the numbers too, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the reason that it did so well with that demographic, my own personal thought on this, mm-hmm. is because they were very smart with the advertising.
Yes.
Starting, you know, three, four months ago, they showed Groot and Rocket, which, you know, kids are going to gravitate right towards that.
Yes.
And it was genius advertising as far as I'm concerned. Just genius.
Yeah.
They knew what they were doing. They drew in exactly who they thought. I was a little surprised about the female audience. I'm thinking that Chris Pratt is probably a bigger draw with females than I could imagine or consider.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, that's the only thing I can say. Maybe I don't know. That's, you know, I can't say it was because Zoe Saldana was in the movie, because we had the Avengers with the Black Widow in it.
Mm-hmm.
And the Black Widow was actually a primary part of Captain America, the Winter Soldier. So can't really say that because there was a female protagonist is the reason it drew in females. That's my thoughts.
Yeah. It's really interesting. I mean, I'm thrilled. I mean, it's certainly going to make Chris Pratt into a level one, you know, Hollywood box
draw now, I would imagine. He can do whatever he wants now. And certainly the director and co-writer, and his name is escaping me at the moment.
James Gunn.
Yeah, Gunn, yeah. Oh, he's certainly going to step up. You know, the funny thing, though, before we start digging into the movie itself, have you been seeing, like, there's cartoons that have been going around and jokes and stuff about there was a cartoon I saw this afternoon that I posted on my Facebook page. You may have seen where the guys in the Hollywood studio are saying, we need to make a TV show like this. It needs to have, you know, the criminals save the galaxy and they're funny and this, that, and the other. And the guy goes, yeah, it was called Firefly, and they throw him out the window.
I didn't see that.
Yeah. See, because when I saw the movie, I was thinking this is a lot like Farscape. And
I saw you say that.
Yeah. And others are saying it's like Firefly. And I'm like, well, it's kind of like both, really. I mean, it touches on both shows because those shows were kind of similar in a way.
Yes, they were. Yeah. And it does. It has that outlaw demographic to it, or whatever you want to call it.
Yeah. Yeah. It makes me sorry that Serenity didn't do better, because I thought that the movie Serenity was about as good as Guardians of the Galaxy. Now, it doesn't have all the – Serenity doesn't have – that's the Firefly movie. It, you know, it was kind of a bomb when it came out in 2007, 2008, somewhere in there. And I really thought it was a fantastic movie, and it didn't have all the little Easter eggs and all the connections to the Marvel Universe and everything that this did, obviously. But to me, just in terms of a fun – outlaw band of rebels out, you know, going up against the Empire and going up against the bad guys, I thought that Serenity was every bit as good as Guardians of the Galaxy. So if you guys out there haven't watched Serenity, man, go pick that movie up. You're not going to get, you know, Celestials or anything like that, but you will get a similar kind of an outlook and a similar type of fun and excitement. So let's dig into the movie a little bit, and hopefully we may have another guest joining us in a few minutes to chime in too. My first reaction to the Guardians of the Galaxy was the first 30 minutes or so of that movie, sort of the first act, could not to me have been much more perfect. If the entire movie had sustained that same level that the first act did, it would have been an A+ for me and in my top two or three movies of all time. But I felt like it tailed off a little bit later. But how did you see it in terms of like the beginning versus the end? And did you think the movie got better as it went along, got worse as it went along? Kind of overall, the overview.
Okay, overall.
Yeah.
My thought was, movie did not lag. I didn't notice any difference in time. You know, like, I wasn't looking at my watch sitting mm-hmm. in the theater. I thought it was very interesting. I did notice it was broken down, to me, into three acts.
Okay.
The first act ended when they went, after they escaped the prison and they went into the collector's headquarters there.
Yeah.
With Celestial's head. That, to me, was the beginning of the second act. Mm-hmm. And the third act was when they went to save... Nova's homeworld. I forgot the name of it now.
Zandar.
Yes, thank you. That to me was the third act when they went to Zandar to rescue them. I liked the third act myself. I thought the second act. I know what you're talking about. Let me put it this way. Mm-hmm. I thought the second act kind of slowed things down a little bit, and I did notice. It wasn't as cohesive, I guess, as the first and third. Let me put it that way. I thought the third act was very good also. Okay. There were certain things I didn't like. I don't know if you want to get into them now or...
Yeah, I've got a top 10 things I liked and top 10 things that I didn't like that I'm gonna sift through and get your reactions and okay. maybe James's too. But yeah, I'm glad that I'm not the only one that felt like it was not entirely even. I mean, just the first, and see, let me make this part very clear up front. The beginning was so good that everything I'm saying here is relative. I'm not, you know, if I say, oh, the second act or the third act disappointed me a little bit, that's in comparison to almost perfection. So there's a relativity here, you understand, you know, it's still,
I thought it was... Overall, I thought it was overall fantastic.
Yeah.
Okay. I know what you're talking about. perfection versus slightly less than perfection.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
So, I mean, I thought it was a fantastic movie myself.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. I'm trying to decide where I put it on in terms of Marvel movies and where I put it in terms of my own generally constantly evolving top 10 movies overall list. And it's a little easier to relate it to the other Marvel movies because it's a much smaller number than all the movies ever. I've kind of got it right now. I need to see it again. Amy and I are going to go see it by ourselves because Mira is six and she was kind of distracting a little bit at different parts of the movie if she got scared or had to go to the bathroom or whatever. And Amy ended up missing like 20 minutes of the movie because Mira kept having to go to the restroom. But so we're going to go back and see it again. But yeah, I think on a second viewing I'll have a clearer understanding of where I rank it. But right now, I mean, it's not Avengers, but there are parts of it I actually like better than a lot of Avengers, you know? So it's kind of second or third for me right now. And if you ask me what's ahead of it besides Avengers, I'm not entirely sure there. Maybe Thor 2, but even then, I mean, you know, there's been things I loved and things that I was a little less than enamored of on all the Marvel movies so far to right. different degrees.
Yes, that's the way it's been. I got to say, for me, the best of the mainstream Marvel movies was probably Captain America, The Winter Soldier. Yeah. And I'm not saying in front of Avengers. To me, I would rate Avengers number one. But there was a couple things about Avengers I wasn't in love with.
Yeah.
All right? The Winter Soldier, to me, is right up there with it. I'd say in the number two spot. I loved Thor, The Dark World.
Mm-hmm.
But on second and third showing, you know, I have the DVD or Blu-ray rather. Mm-hmm. Sure you do too.
Yeah.
And on second and third showings, there were certain things about that movie that rubbed me the wrong way, especially where the Scooby Gang was concerned that was running around with Thor.
Yeah.
That I could have done without. Like I said, after seeing that a couple of times, that became very prevalent with me. Especially the end there. I mean, there was actually a whole nother ending they filmed for that movie that they scrapped.
Really?
Yes. Where basically he pulled down all the power of the nine worlds that were coming through the rift.
Yeah.
Remember that? And he pulled through the hammer. He pulled down all kinds of power and used that to defeat Malekith. They didn't show that. They wanted more involved with the Scooby Gang. So they had them running around with those spiked poles.
Right.
Drawing energy to separate the nine worlds or whatever it was.
Yeah.
It's been a while since I saw it now. But I think personally, I would have liked the ending where it was all Thor.
Yeah, that, I can see. I can kind of see where that would. Yeah. I can see both sides on that. But yeah, I understand what you mean.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like his supporting cast in his solo movies a lot. Thor is a character that needs a good supporting cast, I think, more than most characters. I mean, you know, Tony Stark can do his thing in front of anybody and it's funny, but Thor is kind of a little more vanilla and he needs a little more spice around him, I've always felt, to kind of give him to get things interesting, you know. But
I understand that, but to me, I would rather have the Asgardian cast.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. The Warriors 3 are so great. It's too bad when they don't use them enough.
Exactly. Warriors 3 and Sith.
They've kind of gone to using the humans more than they use them, which is really strange. So,
and that was my issue with it on second and third showing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I can totally
too
see
much
that.
Of the humans.
Yeah,
you know that and that's an aside. That's, you know, but I still love the movie. Don't get me wrong. I still love the movie.
Absolutely. Oh, absolutely.
The Iron Man movies, we've discussed this before. You know, the third one can be thrown in a garbage can for all I'm concerned.
you and me, brother. I hear
exactly.
you.
Exactly.
I hear you.
Throw the garbage can, throw some lighter fluid on it, and walk away.
We were just talking about this on the I did a show the other night with Michael Bailey's Views from the Long Box. We had Gary Mitchell and Joe Crow from Dragon Con. They're the leaders of the Sci-Fi Classics track, and they were talking about how they were in the panel where there was a lady. It was this huge room, like 200 people, and there was this lady that was absolutely taking issue with my critique of Iron Man 3. And at one point, we were feeling like she was going to run up and come over the table at me. So it was a very, very bizarre scene. I believe that our third member is available. Let's see if we can pull James Hickson in here through the miracle of modern technology. We are reaching out across the internet, and if he will pick up, James.
Hello.
James.
Hello, hello, hello.
Welcome to the party. Ralph and I were just touching briefly on Guardians of the Galaxy and kind of talking about the larger context of Marvel Cosmic and everything like that. But we were just about to get into kind of the details of the movie, so you're right on time. First, tell the folks out there who you are and what you do.
Well, my name is James Hickson. I'm the editor-in-chief of Domino Comics. We can be found at www.dominocomics.com. I'm also an aspiring social studies teacher and the father of a ginger daughter. None of those necessarily in that order.
Very cool. All right. So, Ralph and I have determined that we liked it. We liked Guardians. Am I characterizing that correctly, Ralph?
Yes, you are. Yes. Absolutely.
We have our nitpicks, but of course that's to be expected from fans and geeks and so forth. James, what was kind of, we both given our kind of overall generic view. Now we're going to get into the details. So what's your kind of overall take on this movie and how it's doing?
You know, I kind of knew from the first trailer it was going to be a lot of fun. And I like James Gunn from Slither, but when I saw it and I just saw how crazy it was, I was just overjoyed. And especially when I saw that box office that it did over the weekend, I was especially overjoyed because it did, like, what is it, three times what it was expected to do?
Something. I mean, it did. There have been different numbers depending on, you know, the weekend versus the opening day versus U.S. versus global. But I've seen numbers around 100 million thrown around, which must be the U.S. Weekend.
Yeah, and I saw 94 million for the U.S.
Yeah, they were really optimistically hoping for, I think, 80 to 84, which was more than what they originally expected. Maybe it'll do 70. So this is pretty amazing.
Yeah, part of me was kind of thinking, oh, God, no one is going to latch on to these characters. None of them are, you know, named characters. There's no Captain America here. There's no Iron Man.
Right.
But, man, I think big pluses need to be given to the Disney advertising department for this one because they did a fantastic job of promoting this film.
Yeah, it was kind of the anti-John Carter. They did everything they could
exactly
to actually make people see this as opposed to doing everything they could to make people not see it like they did with John Carter.
Oh, John Carter.
Maybe they learned their lesson.
Yeah, maybe so. Yeah, Jim Yelton was on my show last week. We were talking about Marvel Cosmic, kind of the comics, and talking about how they're doing this kind of backward. That, you know, with the Avengers, they introduced the individual characters, then brought them together for the Avengers. Whereas with Guardians of the Galaxy, they've sort of just kind of jumped into the deep end of the pool with the whole team Guardians, and they're going to bring other things in through that. So, what are you guys' thoughts, Ralph? Let me ask you first. What is your thoughts in terms of how they're doing this, bringing the cosmic stuff into the movies?
Well, I almost think they took a chance with this, but they obviously knew what they were doing. Because, like you said, they were unknown characters to the majority of people, and they did jump into the deep end of the pool with it. And it wasn't like really, you know, we know Gamora and Drax for 30 years.
Right.
But they're not even the same Gamora and Drax we know.
Right, that's the truth.
Yeah.
True.
It's totally different. And
these characters didn't come around to, like, say, the 2000 Annihilation.
Yeah.
Right. Right, exactly.
Yeah, they had sort of redone Drax during Annihilation, I think Keith Giffen and that crowd. And Gamora's always kind of evolved. When she's not under Starlin's control, she always ends up changing. That's just kind of inevitable. And right. then I think Rocket and Groot came along with Star-Lord with Annihilation, too. And then, because he was a completely forgotten Marvel character until they brought him back for Annihilation. And then Rocket and Groot were brought in by Abnett and Lanning with
Conquest.
Yeah, Annihilation Conquest, which was, I thought, fantastic, a fantastic story.
I actually think Conquest was better than Annihilation, which is surprising since it was a sequel crossover.
Dude, no. Annihilation is about as exciting as painting the house. There was almost nothing I enjoyed except for Nova, I think. Then bringing back Nova. There was almost nothing I liked about Annihilation. Keith Giffen put me to sleep, bless his heart. They brought Abnett and Lanning in and pumped some blood, put some electricity into it with Annihilation Conquest. Ralph, how would you compare those two?
Well, pretty much what you said right there. The original Annihilation was almost plodding.
Yes.
I mean, I enjoyed it. You know, I did read it, but it wasn't. My thing is, I'm comparing it to Stalin all the time.
Right.
And it's not Stalin.
Right.
It was not Stalin. One thing I didn't like, I specifically did not like that Giffen did, he basically turned the universe dirty. I mean, in the Stalin Marvel universe, everything was shiny and bright and futuristic, where you went, wow, that's really cool when you see that. You know, whatever it was, whether he's depicting a city, a spacecraft, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Giffen came along, and all of a sudden, everything kind of took on this almost junk look.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? I didn't like that.
No, and I agree.
That was right there when Giffen started Annihilation. Abnett and Lanning came along and did Conquest, and yes, it was a much better story. It flowed much, much better. It was faster moving.
Mm-hmm.
And then you had the Thanos Imperative after that.
Yeah.
Which I don't even remember who did it. I have it sitting on my shelf here. I don't remember who did it. But that's the one where Nova disappears at the end.
Mm-hmm.
And that I didn't – I mean, I liked the story, but I really didn't care for the fact that Nova was gone either.
Well, let's talk about – out of Conquest, they spun this Guardians of the Galaxy series that Abnett Lanning wrote and Paul Pelletier was drawing, which is just a perfect combination to me.
Yes.
And that's pretty much where this movie, Guardians of the Galaxy, came from, was Abnett Lanning's relatively short-lived series, but I knew it wasn't going to last forever, even though, you know, even as good as it was, but I was grateful for every issue I have. I've got the hardcovers now collected, and let's kind of transition over into the movie. I've got my top 10 things I liked and top 10 things I didn't like, and I'm going to start throwing them out, and we can kind of dissect them if you want to, or if you guys have some you want to counter with or whatever. So
I didn't know there'd be a test.
There is a test, yes. Should I start with the good things or the bad things?
Let's start with the good.
All right. You think so? All right.
Goodness first.
Number one, I have a list. Here we go. Number one, we actually saw a celestial walking around blowing crap up.
Oh yeah, that
oh
was.
Oh my god.
And it was like a Jack Kirby celestial too. You know,
yes.
they didn't do it up anyway. It was a Jack Kirby big lines where they really shouldn't be. Celestial's like, oh yeah.
Wasn't it Arishem?
Probably. I didn't get his name tag. I know that that's the big one that you're referring to, Ralph.
Yeah, he's like the Destroyer, Arishem the Destroyer, or
yeah.
Something.
Oh, he's blowing up a planet, so it must have hit a big stick.
Yeah.
And it tied it into the Infinity Gems.
Yes.
Did anyone get the license plate on that celestial?
Yeah, right.
No, because they're all dead. But no, I love the Celestial so much, and by the way, that puts paid to my long argument that you didn't have to turn Galactus into V'ger from Star Trek the Motion Picture. You can have a giant plodding purple guy, and it works.
Thank you.
Oh, it works. It works.
Yeah. Man. And yet another franchise to be sure ripped away from Fox immediately.
I think that probably this movie had more moments where I was leaning forward in the theater with my jaw hanging loose than any other movie I've probably ever seen, just in terms of seeing things I didn't expect I was going to see.
I have to tell you,
yeah.
The scene with the Celestial, I had my brother with me.
Yeah.
We both turned towards each other. We're like, it's a Celestial.
Yeah.
Blown away.
That was my reaction, too. Okay, number two, and we can revisit if you want, if you think of anything, but I'm just going to keep throwing them out. Number two, Cosmo the Soviet space dog was in it. I was so afraid they were going to leave him out. I love Cosmo from the comics.
So, yeah, you know what? Why didn't he talk? I'm sitting there waiting to talk.
He didn't have anything to say.
Yeah.
Yeah, there you go.
I know. At least he did he – did. Did they show him? Did he growl at Rocket, or am I just imagining that, or something?
He growled at Star-Lord, I think, or something.
Okay, because in the comics, he and Rocket like don't like each other and growl at each other all the time.
Oh, okay, I missed that. I didn't catch that in the movie.
Yeah, and see, and that takes me into number three. This part all goes together. Is that Cosmo? They met Cosmo, the Soviet space dog. They met him on Nowhere, and so I'm thinking, going in, I'm like, well, there's no way that they'll have Nowhere, K-N-O-W-H-E-R-E. There's no way that they'll do that. That's too complicated. They'll never do that. And all the, and not only that, but Nowhere is made out of a dead celestial's hollowed out skull, basically. Well, not only did they go to Nowhere, it was a celestial hollowed out skull. I'm just sitting in the theater going,
that was awesome.
Good Lord. They're going there.
Yes.
They're going there. That,
yep.
That brings me into, I don't want to get your guys' viewpoints on this. That brings me into another thing that I've said before, which is Marvel, when they're adapting their own stuff, they're just like, screw it. I don't care how weird it is. I don't care how many psychedelic drugs Starlin was doing in the 60s when he created it. Put it in there. If Fox or Sony were doing these movies, they'd be like, a Soviet dog? No, we don't. Just no, nobody get that. A giant celestial's head? No, just have them go to like an ice planet or something. You know, they'd have dumbed it down. Ronan? Oh, he doesn't need his little chainmail thing over his head. Just make him some big Darth Vader looking guy. They'd have, I guarantee you that any other studio would have dumbed it down. And Marvel put every glorious, weird, wacky detail in this movie and in their previous ones. What do y'all, how do y'all see that?
If it was a Fox movie, Ronan would be sexy and in a trench coat. And it wouldn't have a hammer. He'd have kung fu.
Ralph?
I personally thought it was perfect, especially Ronan's depiction. I thought that the guy, I forgot his name, Lee something or other.
Lee Pace.
Lee Pace, thank you. I thought he was absolutely perfect as Ronan. He had the right attitude, the right look, mm-hmm. and he was intimidating enough. I mean, I said, this is Ronan from the comics.
Now,
this is fantastic.
I have things to say about what Ronan was all about that I'll get to on the negative side, but I agree in terms of the character and how he acted and looked and all that. They had it down pat, no
they
doubt.
Did.
All right, going to keep rolling here. Number four, I love how they tied everything together. The Celestials, you saw the Cosmic Cube kind of at one point represented, the Infinity
yes.
Gems. It's like they've taken the whole Marvel. It's kind of like what they did with the Ultimates, with the Ultimate Universe, but a lot of that was done poorly. But the effort was there, which was let's take – see, basically, the Marvel Universe, as everybody knows, right, was put together over decades with lots and lots of different creative people involved. There's a lot of repetition, and a lot of things don't connect to each other. So for the movie universe, they're kind of shrink everything down and have everything be interconnected. And I kind of like that. Is that a good thing or a bad thing? Let me start with Ralph. Is that a good thing or a bad thing?
It's a good thing.
Yeah?
It's a good thing that it all connects. It makes sense to people. Even especially, I mean, how many people that were in that theater did not know Marvel history?
Yeah. Oh.
Right? There had to be tons of them.
Absolutely.
They went to see the talking raccoon. They went to see.
They did. My little girl did.
Exactly. They went to see the talking raccoon and the tree.
And they love the tree even more than the raccoon is what's funny. One of the things that's coming out of this weekend is that people are like, well, I thought I'd like Rocket, but Groot was so awesome.
Right.
I am Groot.
Exactly. Yes.
Exactly.
So, James, good or bad that they're tying everything together?
Fantastic. You know, you mentioned the Ultimate Comics. And that's interesting because it almost seems at this point like the Ultimates was the pilot project for the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Really was.
Because, you know, what they did is they took the classic, and then they took the extreme other end, which is Ultimates. They looked at it and said, what works, what doesn't work, and then combined them into the Marvel Cinematic Universe. And it's working fantastically for them.
And they've done a good job, I think, of leaving out the stuff from the Ultimates that went over the line, that wasn't good, you know.
Like, you know, does this A stand for France?
Well, that's the whole way that that Captain America acted. They're using the classic Captain America,
yes.
and not Captain that was kind of in the comics, and also Henry Pym was very put upon in the Ultimates version, and they're apparently going to treat him with a little more respect, at least I think.
Douglas.
Yeah.
I did not read any of the Ultimate stuff. I heard everything I heard about it pushed me further away from ever picking any of it up. Let me put it that way.
It had its good moments and its bad moments. I thought that the second series, they did it in kind of two or three. I guess they did like three 12-issue series. Third series was Jeff Loeb was horrible. But the first series was okay. But the second series was, I thought, actually pretty good. If you can get past that they're see, here's the difference for me. If you know going in that this is an alternate universe version of the Avengers and does not in any way affect your own Avengers, you can enjoy it. But my big fear back then was that they were going to just make the old ones go away and this was going to become the Avengers. And so that was a lot more, you know, hitting me close to home than just then basically a big what if.
No chance of that now.
You know, one of the things that it's funny you mentioned that. Do you guys remember a few years ago when Marvel was sticking their toe in the animated oceans there, mm-hmm. and they came out with those two Ultimate Avengers animated movies?
Yes.
It was Ultimate Avengers. It wasn't the Avengers. It was. I watched those and I was like, "What the hell?"
All right. Well, Ralph, you need to know this then, because if you haven't read the comics, the two Ultimate Avengers animated were half and half.
Okay.
So if you were to read the Ultimates, it would be much more offensive to you than what was in those two. Because when I watched those two movies, I was like, oh, they dialed it back a little bit. Good.
Really?
Yes. Yes, they dialed it way back for those two movies. They were maybe 60-40 Ultimates. Did you see those, James?
Yeah, you know, back in the day, those actually gave us kind of like hope. You were thinking, oh, man, we might actually get movies of these characters, because even Iron Man hadn't come out at that point. I remember I was back in college at that point when a bunch of us got together in the dorm hall and just watched those movies and were like, okay, this isn't great, but this will do. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's no Batman Begins, obviously, but
yeah, we've just had this slow build up to this glorious time we've got now. All right, my number five and number six, blow them out real quick, was simply Rocket was about as good as I hoped. That's number five. And number six, Groot was even better than I hoped. Because in the comics, Groot, he's sort of limited by the fact that it's stills, you know. But I thought that what really worked so well for Groot is that he could be doing subtle things almost in the background. As many overt things as he did, it was neat just seeing him kind of in the background doing stuff when he wasn't necessarily the focus, but you knew that Gunn and whoever else were like, oh, if they look back and see him, it'll be funny. So there was multiple things going on the screen at the same time, and he was often involved in that. So, James, what's your take on Rocket and Groot and how they translated over?
Oh, they were fantastic, and you're exactly right. Especially with the with Rocket and Groot, I think I'm almost certain that both of them were done motion capture by James Gunn's brother.
Oh, okay.
So he also was oh goodness, I'm blanking on the name.
Well, did Andy Serkis have anything to do with it, or am I thinking of something else?
You're thinking of Avengers.
Oh, okay. Oh, he's involved. Okay, maybe so. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, but James Gunn's brother, who was also the first mate of the pirate crew, did the motion capture for Groot and Rocket. And I think he did a fantastic job, especially with Groot. And then when you add Vin Diesel's voice afterwards, it's, you know, you're getting Iron Giant flashbacks. So, yeah. Of course, you're going to start tearing up.
Well, Ralph, being even more old school than me, and I respect that tremendously, Rocket and Groot, again, though those two characters have been around for a while, they are sort of Johnny come lately to the mainstream, you know, Marvel Cosmic. What has been your reaction to seeing them become so prominent, and how did you take it, them being such a big part of the movie?
Well, like you said, they were old. Those characters were around a long time. First off, Rocket first appeared in a very old issue of The Hulk, written by Bill Mantlow.
Oh.
And he was
God bless Bill Mantlow.
Did you see what Marvel did for him yesterday?
No, I didn't. I heard something, but I didn't hear the details.
They basically gave him a private screening in his hospital room of the movie.
Oh.
I thought that was fantastic.
You ought to give him a big check too, but that's cool.
And he gave it, the poor guy, he gave them a big thumbs up. He had tears in his eyes.
Apparently they are assisting with like some medical expenses related to his creating Rocket Raccoon, and his brother says they've been really fantastic as far as assisting with him.
Yeah, I saw that too. It was I'm surprised at that, and I'm glad they're doing that for the man. I really am.
Both of the things you just said, Ralph. Yeah, I'm surprised and I'm glad. I mean, they got to be careful because if you set the precedent of actually paying and or acknowledging the vast contributions of the writers and artists that they're making these billion-dollar movies out of, next thing you know, those people are going to want their rightful share of the money, and you can't have that. So,
yeah, right.
But I love Bill Mantlo so much. He was just a machine. He was like to comics what the old pulp writers were to literature, just cranking stuff out. You know, I mean, you could have gone to Mantlo and said, I need a 22-page issue of Marvel 2-in-1 where the Thing teams up with a marshmallow. And Mantlo's like, on it. Here you go. You know, and it would have been good.
He was great.
Yes.
He was fantastic. I mean, how many titles a month did he write?
Half.
Yeah, Jesus. And look at the big stuff he brought to Marvel. Yeah. Rom, Space Knight, the Micronauts.
Oh, Micronauts, yes.
Yeah. I mean, just, you know, a bunch of big stuff besides writing the Hulk, writing, you know, 2 Spider-Man books a month, and God knows what else. I mean, he was all over the place.
If you took a stack of Marvel comics I might have been reading in like third or fourth grade, and you threw it up in the air, chances are half of them were written by either Bill Mantlo or Doug Munch.
No Mark Greenwald?
No, I never really read many of his.
He's one of my heroes. And he's in the same era as Mantlo, too.
Who was that?
Greenwald.
Mark Greenwald, okay.
Yeah. I mean, I know he did great stuff and everything. I actually have some of his body in my house. It's true, right? You've got
that Squadron Supreme volume with his ashes in it.
I've got the first edition Squadron Supreme trade paperback that has his ashes in the ink. That is exactly right. I've got it in my basement.
Oh, God. I've got Mark Gruwald in my basement.
I do. Some portion thereof. I mean, you know.
Yeah.
We could do a seance and talk to him. But no, those guys were great. And it's cool to see all these different influences. You know, it's neat because a movie like this or like Avengers, you know, you get so many different creators from the past, all their brilliant ideas poured together into a bucket. I mean, just think, you've got Starlin, you got Mantlo, you got Kirby and Stan, you got Abnett and Lanning. You've got so many brilliant creators.
Who? That's Steve Englehart.
Englehart, absolutely.
He created Star-Lord.
Yeah.
That reminds me, did Abnett and Lanny get special thanks in those credits? Because I did not see them in there.
Yes, they did.
I hope they did. God, I mean, Abnett was on set part of the time when they were filming it, so he...
Okay, it was probably somewhere else then.
He could run over with a Sharpie and kind of make sure, put it in there. All right, number 7 on my list is the music. Now, we got to say something about the music, right?
It has been a constant play since I bought it Thursday night.
It's very unorthodox for this kind of a movie, and I think that was one more thing that kind of skewed people's expectations. I think that the music had a lot to do with this movie appealing to a broader audience than what the normal Marvel movie has so far, right? Because the music up front made people think, oh, this one's a little quirky. This is a little different, right?
Ooga chaka.
Yeah.
Oh, I thought that the first trailer was probably the second best trailer I've ever seen in terms of making me interested in seeing a movie. The whole thing where they introduce each one of them when the Novas are talking about them and, you know, Star-Lord's flipping them off and they call them a-holes and everything. That whole trailer is hilarious, you know?
It is. Oh, yeah. Sorry, go ahead.
No, I just said it is hilarious. That's it.
And it was effective.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
I remember somebody leaked the San Diego Comic-Con footage from last year online. And, you know, I just watched it because I wanted to see if Rocket looked okay. Mm-hmm. And then I hear the music, and I was like, wait a minute, is that? It is. Oh, my God.
It was very effective. Yeah, the only movie trailer I've ever seen that was more effective at making me see something I wasn't sure about at the beginning, although I was going to see this, of course, was Prometheus. Fortunately, this one was actually lived up to the trailer, unlike that one. Hmm.
You poor dear.
Yeah.
Yeah. I thought that the music was basically very inspired by them. It gave that whole link back to 25 years ago.
Yes.
You know? And
that's right.
It explains, like, where Star-Lord is from, basically. Now you know he's a kid, and he listened to this one tape for 25 years. Yeah. I mean,
and I'm really curious at what point in the creative process they put together that playlist.
Mm-hmm.
Very good question. Mm-hmm. Very good question.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to throw number 8 out. Number 8, this movie had all kinds of Easter eggs. That's just a generic way of saying that there, you know, all the way through it, you kept seeing things. In fact, I didn't know this. I didn't realize this one. I'm curious if either one of you noticed this. Bobby Polite, who is my co-plotter on the Sentinels novels, he told me yesterday that the collector's assistant girl was Karina.
Yes, she was.
Wow. I didn't get that at all.
Now, you remember in the comics, Karina was his daughter.
Yeah. Who married Korvac or was with Korvac.
She was Korvac's wife. Exactly. Yeah.
So I'm still holding out for a Korvac movie, but I don't think we'll ever get it. But I just think Korvac is as good as Thanos, and so I want a Korvac.
Oh, yeah. I could see this tying into an Avengers movie, though, without a doubt, with her, because of the way she disappeared. We don't know exactly what gem that was, if that was the time gem, the power gem, whatever.
That's right.
The time gem, she could have been sent to the future, where Korvac is. I mean,
oh, man, you make me happy.
There's a tie-in right there.
You mean like Red Skull is going to?
Oh, man.
Exactly.
Yeah, there's a room somewhere where, like, all these people that have disappeared through cosmic devices are all sitting around going, well, how do we get out of here?
Yeah.
The Red Skull, Karina, and whoever else. Yeah,
who's got a deck of cards?
Yeah, and then and Doctor Who will show up in the TARDIS and rescue them all and then be like, why did I rescue these people? Number 9. Well, wait, before I go to number 9, what other really obscure Easter eggs besides the obvious ones did you guys notice that maybe people haven't noticed? I'm trying to think. I mean, Cosmo was a big one for me.
Well, T.J. Burns said to me, and I missed it, he said, in the tank was the Shaper of Worlds.
Oh, no.
And I missed it. I didn't see it. I
have to go look for that now.
Me too.
Well, obviously, they had one of the little baddies from Thor 2 in the tank.
I heard that.
I didn't see that. What was that? One of the Dark Elves or whatever you mean?
Yeah, one of the Dark Elves.
Oh, brother.
Which I'm like, okay, there can still be some, I guess.
Hmm.
Somebody said that they saw Adam Warlock's cocoon.
Oh, that would be awesome. I know Ralph would be happy.
I think that was actually in the trailer last year in Thor where they brought the collector the cube. I thought you saw the cocoon.
Oh, man. Now I got to go watch that, too. Thanks.
Yeah.
That was in the after credit scene of Thor.
I think it's interesting that they're not making the collector so much a villain as just a way of showing all this wacky Easter egg stuff.
Right.
Because he hasn't done anything evil yet, has he?
No,
not really. I mean, he tried to buy a weapon of mass destruction, but, you know, everybody does that.
Absolutely, yeah. So he's Gaddafi, but not... or whatever, but he's not really yet the villain, so...
Well, he was always a very gray character in a lot of senses after his initial appearances, where he did play a villain.
Yeah.
After that, he became this very gray character.
That's true.
He didn't really know what was going on. That's when it was revealed he was a Elder of the Universe.
Yeah, right. And he was trying to, like, sort of save the Avengers from Korvac, so...
Right.
Kidnapping them forever.
But, you know. Yeah, the collector's always been a method of making stuff happen in the Marvel Universe. I mean, wasn't he in the JLA Avengers crossover?
No, he was involved in the Contest of Champions, is what you're thinking.
Okay, that's what I'm thinking of.
He and the Grandmaster were competing. No, he was the Grandmaster's brother, right? And the Grandmaster was playing, and if the Grandmaster won, the collector would come back. But basically, Death or whoever cheated, and so the Grandmaster had to die for the collector to come back. I don't even remember
who was the other opponent in that.
Yeah, it must have been Death, wasn't it? Surely.
I don't remember.
Wasn't it Grandmaster versus Death? If Grandmaster won, he got the collector back, and if he lost, he died too, and Death cheated him and swapped him out, basically. Which was fine, because what are you going to do with the Grandmaster? He's just kind of a useless cosmic Kree dude, so
right.
Collector's much more interesting.
Oh, yeah.
Number
yeah. Oh. challenges a hooded female known, called the Unknown, eventually revealed to be Death.
Okay, yeah.
Sorry, spoilers.
That's okay. Yeah.
We gave out giant spoiler warnings at the beginning. Let's see, we've got about 12 minutes of time left, so let's get through the bad things. I got to get two more good things. Number nine, Drax the Destroyer was much better than I expected, because the trailer just kind of made him look like generic tough guy. But what I loved about him is that they made him into sort of the noble Native American, like Indian chief guy. And I thought that was awesome because he just was very terse, right? And very literal.
He was very. Yes. They made a joke about that in the movie, how literally.
Yes. I mean, he could have just been generic big tough guy, right? But they didn't stop there. They made his personality interesting. They made his dialogue interesting. But don't you think he sounded like he was playing basically like a 1950s Native American chief or something?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I think you nailed it with that, right?
I was definitely impressed with Batista because, you know, mm-hmm. my first thought was, oh, great, another wrestler becoming an actor.
Right.
But, man, he delivered it, especially that one line, one of my favorite lines in the whole movie. And it says, nothing goes over my head. I would catch it.
Yes.
Well, I felt like if maybe, I don't know, but maybe if they had him talk just like a normal character, it the acting wouldn't have maybe been there. But by having his affected speech be that halting, terse thing, it worked for somebody who's not really a professional actor. You know, in other words, it gave him a way to do his dialogue that sounded not, you know, it sounded stilted on purpose.
I thought he was amazingly good.
Yeah.
As Drax. Yeah. And also what you just said there, somebody who's not a professional actor. I don't know. A lot of those wrestlers.
Yeah.
That whole thing.
That's a good point, Ralph.
Yeah.
Now, Ralph, I know you're going to agree with me here that we would probably rather have had the purple and green Drax that has cosmic energy blast, right? But given that we were stuck with this new version that's just a knife fighter, this was about as good of a version as we were going to get, don't you think?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, like you said, I want the purple and green guy or whatever. You know, I mean, that's me. You know, that's my Drax.
Mm-hmm.
To me, that was a character who was on level with the Silver Surfer.
Right, yes.
And this guy, I'm not seeing that. I'm seeing a guy with knives.
Right.
I was slightly disappointed that it didn't make him human, that it didn't make him alien, and he didn't talk about his wife and Heather.
Me too.
But, you know, I forgot about that pretty quickly. I was having so much fun.
Yeah,
so.
No moon dragon, in other words. Or if she comes along, she won't be his, I guess, unless she's not human either, basically.
Right.
We'll see.
And the one thing I was really disappointed with Drax, and this kind of ties into what I'm going to say about Ronan, is that his mission was to kill Ronan. And I'm like, no, his mission is to kill Thanos. That's his entire purpose of being. No. And I was kind of just dwelling on that the whole time. And at the end,
yes.
When he says, well, now I have to kill Thanos, I'm like, yes, I'm jumping up and down the theater. Yes, now you got to get, that's what you have to do. Exactly. And if anybody,
and that would make perfect sense.
Yeah.
Although what you mentioned about no moon dragon, you know, moon dragon could just be half alien because he mentions he's eaten raccoon before. Maybe his wife was a human.
Yeah. Let me throw number 10 out, and we'll get to the bad things. Number 10 is just that seeing the Kree and seeing Xandar, that was awesome. Now, I've got a couple of negative things to say about the Kree, and particularly Xandar. But just having the Kree and Xandar in a movie made me very, very, very giddy. So,
Me too.
Yeah. Not a lot to say about that, I think. Let's roll into my... Actually, I've only got eight, and we probably only have time for eight, if that. So let me run through these real quick and get your reactions. The things I didn't like as much. There was no real resolution to Star-Lord's story. We never found out who his dad was. Yondu escaped, you know, or they escaped or whatever. The whole Star-Lord's backstory thing just sort of ended with no resolution. Your thoughts, Ralph first.
Well, you know, they gave you that little scene there at the end where they're looking at his DNA strands or whatever and saying, you're an alien, part of you is an alien race.
Right.
All right. So my thought was, second movie, you're going to find out
his
history. That was my thought about it. Yes, it did fizzle. It did kind of let out. But I also thought, how much are you going to jam into one movie?
That's the truth. That's a good point. James?
Yeah.
So, I mean, I thought they left it open for the second one. Right. We're going to find out who he is.
Right. Yeah, I mean, the stuff with Star-Lord, it was good. I'm kind of disappointed at first when you're saying, you know, when the mother was talking about how his father was a maid of light and was so beautiful. And I was thinking, oh, man, he's going to be half alien. That's going to take away so much of the viewpoint aspect of this character because he's just so interesting as a full human. And it goes on and on. Then it's like, okay, that's how he survived getting a gem. I can accept that. And then just, you know, Yondu's line about, you know, the first mate and Yondu's talk about, so do you regret that we didn't take him to his dad? Nah, that guy's kind of an asshole. So, it's like, yeah. Okay, I buy it. Although I was convinced that Nathan Fillion would show up as the father in the last scene.
You know, back in the comics, though, he was half alien. His father was an alien.
Yeah, that's what I thought. That's why he's Star-Lord.
Yeah, exactly.
His
whole shtick was the man who inherited the universe.
Yeah.
So.
All right, last couple of minutes. Let's get a couple in here.
Go.
Yondu. Good, bad, yeah.
Space Merle.
I think we can leave it at Space Merle. But it is kind of a... Ralph, what do you say about this as the old school man? That Yondu wasn't Yondu, but basically Drax was kind of Yondu.
Yeah. So, I don't know what they did with Yondu. I didn't like it. You know, no big mohawk. Basically a thug.
Yeah. Just weird.
They showed Yaka Arrow, but it wasn't shot from a bow. I mean, come on.
That was really bizarre.
Yeah, that was just stupid.
Okay, I said it.
Yeah.
I said it was Farscape with a big budget. I said the collector didn't kind of really do a whole lot. We've covered that. Ralph and I talked a little bit about this already, James, that the final act I thought was a little weaker. Ralph was okay with it. I thought the final act just sort of turned into generic run and jump and shoot. What did you think about kind of the way that it, the third act compared to the beginning of it? Because I thought it kind of dropped off a little bit.
You know, I can see where you're coming from, especially with the Guardian side of it. But, man, when those Xander fighters came up, you know, I'm one of the first people who said, man, Xander's with fighter planes? What the heck is that all about? But, man, when those Xander fighters just link together like that and hold the ship back, I got to admit, I was getting some old 1977 Star Wars vibe off of that.
Well, that was kind of the Tholian web is what I was thinking.
Yeah, yeah. I actually had a problem with that whole scene because, to me, what the hell are the Novas doing flying ships?
Well, yes, that Ralph. All right, let me transition into my other point. I got two left, and that you've hit it the nail on the head.
Yep.
We had a depowered Nova Corps, but I understand why. What was your Ralph? Continue on. What's your thinking about the Novas being what they were?
It wasn't the Novas,
right?
I mean, that's what it amounts to.
They're Starfleet.
Yeah, exactly. It was Starfleet.
Yep.
I was like, what's going on here? Where's Nova? You know, I expected. When I saw the guys standing there with the helmets on, I was like, all right, cool. We're getting some Novas here.
Yeah.
Unexpected guys flying out there to fight to face these things.
Yeah.
Nobody, for a space movie based on cosmic superheroes, nobody flew in that movie.
There were no cosmic superheroes. That's the thing, though.
Yet.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. I think, this is my theory, you had to depower the Nova Corps and turn them into Starfleet because the main characters, the Guardians of the Galaxy, don't really have much in the way of powers. And if the rank-and-file soldiers of Xandar are basically superheroes, then it kind of devalues your main characters. But if you turn them into sort of generic space soldiers, then suddenly your raccoon and your tree and your guy with knives are a slight cut above in a way, you know? You have to bring the others down if your main characters are depowered from what they were in the comics, which they certainly, you know, were. So yeah. I just don't think a Nova Corps would have worked, even though I desperately wanted to see it, with superpowers.
You know, and after they do Avengers 3, a.k.a. the Infinity Gauntlet,
yeah,
they can have the Nova Corps saying, wow, we really need to step up our game. Hey, let's give our guys superpowers, and hey, let's recruit that teenager from Earth.
I hope so. Yeah.
Yeah, me too. I don't know if you have this on your list.
I got one more thing.
Go ahead. Let's see if it's the same thing I'm thinking.
We got 30 seconds to go, so let's get this in. Ronan, I liked, like you said earlier, Ralph. I liked how he was portrayed, but they turned it into a sort of a fanatical, murderous rebel Kree, and then they killed him off.
Yes. So,
and he hated Xandar, and I didn't understand his motivation. I didn't understand the character inside. The outside was great, but the inside was so different and so vague that I didn't quite get that, because I like Ronan as a character. I especially like what they were doing with him in the Guardians of the Galaxy, where he was actually becoming kind of likable and marrying Crystal. So, James, your thoughts on Ronan. Ralph, I'll get your thoughts on Ronan. We're going to wrap up.
Well, my thoughts on Ronan, I did think it was weird that he was like a religious zealot, because, you know, my main exposure to Ronan was through Annihilation and Annihilation Conquest, where he was this kind of noble bastard.
Yeah. Yeah, noble bastard. Exactly.
And the only thing I can think of is that, you know, Xander here takes the place of the Skrulls.
Yeah, well, that works. That's a good, and they can't use the Skrulls exactly. So, Ralph, your thoughts on Ronan?
Well, here's my thoughts on Ronan. I actually have problems with Ronan because do you remember the first fight he had with Drax? He was basically beating the hell out of him.
Yes.
And I had a problem with that.
Yeah.
I figured those two would be basically toe to toe on an equal level.
Yeah.
Instead, he threw Drax around like a papier-mâché.
That's exactly right.
I had a problem with that. I thought he was very much overpowered for that situation.
That's exactly right.
And as far as his fanaticism, you know, going back to in the 70s, if you look at some of his appearances in Captain Marvel, he was a little fanatical. He was, you know, this personification of the Kree accuser.
Mm-hmm.
And there was some fanaticism involved. I think it was a little over the top in the movie. And like you said, we don't know his motivation. Yeah, he hated the Xandarians. Okay, why?
Yeah.
We don't know. We don't know. He just did.
Yep.
And the other thing I didn't like, I really was hoping to see the Supreme Intelligence. I really
love. Yeah, I've heard a couple of people mention that the Supreme or not being on there was kind of a bummer. I agree. He's not the greatest character, but it would have been nice. You know, but hopefully we'll see more of the Kree in the sequel. Maybe he'll tie into Star-Lord's dad or something. Maybe they'll make Star-Lord into basically Mar-Vell, where he's a pink Kree or something. Who knows? But
who knows?
We'll see. Gentlemen, I'm totally out of time. I really appreciate you guys coming on at kind of short notice today to talk about this movie. We'll have it up in the next day or two, and I'm going to have to run. But thanks so much, guys.
Thanks for having me. It was fantastic. Great. I enjoyed this.
Right. I like your knife. I'm keeping it.
And on that, we're out of here. See you guys down the road.
All right.
Griffin, Tranquility Base here. The Eagle has landed.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network, your station for all things geek. Classic, current, and beyond. Be part of the crew at ESONetwork.com.
This has been a White Rocket Entertainment production.